Hi everyone, again, Room with a Review, podcast, weekly episode, and this week will be Knives Out. I was really happy that I got to see this movie, actually. I heard a lot of good things about it in December, and then it was almost booked out every session, or there was just like sessions were so hard to get to, or it were obscure times that I like was busy doing other stuff already, and then obviously it'd been out for a little while, and fewer movies or theaters were showing it at a wide variety of times. So I did eventually manage to get to it, which I was very happy about. And it was a pretty good movie. I can see why a lot of people really liked it. It was very interesting in hindsight, thinking back through how much did you guess early on, were you accurate in what you thought was going to happen? So basically it's... as they say in the movie, it's effectively the board game Clue or Cluedo taking place sort of thing, where there's a patriarch of a very wealthy family who has died, and there's a couple of investigators who are investigating the different family members, talking to them all, trying to figure out if one of them killed him. The death was ruled a suicide, so the majority of the movie is investigating each of those characters. We also, though, for the majority of the movie, follow the nurse of this patriarch, who is played by Christopher Plummer, the patriarch that is. The nurse, she's also his friend. He basically is employing her to not only provide him with his medication, but also to continually just be around, spend time with him. And you see a lot of the flaws in his family members, so whether it's his children or the partners of his children or his grandchildren. And there's quite a lot of big names in it. So you've got Toni Collette plays his daughter-in-law, Michael Shannon plays his son, and Jamie Lee Curtis plays his daughter. Christopher Plummer's character, is a author, and he writes crime novels and other things like that. And then Michael Shannon's character is his publisher. Jamie Lee Curtis is a self-made woman, as it says, or as it's supposed to be. And Toni Collette is trying to establish a almost Gwyneth Paltrow-y type beauty empire. And then we've also got his grandchildren, one of whom is Chris Evans, kind of the proverbial black sheep, estranged kind of member of the family. And then there's one other grandchild, the daughter of Toni Collette and... not Toni Collette, Jamie Lee Curtis and her... No, sorry, it is Toni Collette's daughter in that. Yes, so we get all these characters throughout. And then Daniel Craig is the private investigator that's been brought in to work with the police or the sheriff. And... yeah, he's an interesting character. I don't know that he did a great job. It's probably one of the biggest flaws of the movie. And while he didn't have to be more than a little bit cardboard, he was too cardboard for me. He didn't have to be more than that. But there was no... I didn't get the sense that it was an authentic character. He had this thick kind of Cajun, bourbon, Kentucky-ish, Georgian, Louisiana accent. I'm not an expert on exactly which region, but it's definitely from that kind of variety. And the accent, it seemed a little off to me. I don't know. Maybe it was a good accent. Again, I'm not familiar enough with those sort of accents to really tell. But it just... sounded at times a little off. It was pretty good for the most part. But then his character as well was meant to be this really, really, really good investigator. And yet some of the things he identified were things that I felt the police should have identified. And that was a little bit frustrating for me, because basically he was doing a tour of the whole house. And instead of just accepting that it was a suicide after it was ruled a suicide, he continued to investigate. The police, though, were more happy to accept that it was a suicide. And I think that was part of the problem, is that there weren't police investigating, that he was kind of there, and I don't know why he... Well, I know why, but he... There was an important reason why he was brought in as a private investigator, but that's revealed towards the end of the movie. But I think he almost could have just been a police officer, and you could have changed the way he was brought in to do an investigation. And basically, he doesn't know why he's there, because he received an envelope of money to investigate the case, but he doesn't know who sent it. And so, yes, we've got... He kind of befriends the young nurse maid character. There's also another maid throughout the movie who appears in and out. And so she's quite pivotal at different times. And anyway, so as the movie starts with investigations into each of the children and grandchildren of Harlan, who is Christopher Plummer's character, and their partners and so on. And basically we've got an investigator and the sheriff and Daniel Craig's character, the PI, sitting in on these interviews. And so as they ask questions, you start to see a couple of discrepancies in the accounts and things like that. And there's a lot of humor throughout. It's quite humorous, but it's not a comedy, I would say. Especially in the first hour, and then at moments after that, but it definitely after the first hour or so, there's a very clear turning point where it ramps up into full crime. Not quite thriller, but yeah, much more of a crime story than a comedy crime story. And so we get all these other characters appearing throughout, and it's just kind of... The first part of the movie is really focusing on the investigation. And then it kind of finishes, you could say, the first act with the ending of the interview of the nurse, our central character. And so from there, we start to follow her storyline into the second act. And basically, you know, she... Well, yeah, she's got a South American background. It's never established exactly what country she's from. And that's part of one of the jokes, is people keep referring to different things. But her name, Marta Cabrera, she basically is working with the investigators because she is unable to lie. And each time she lies, she throws up. And so again... Everyone knows this, so they just always trust her, because if she says something and doesn't throw up, then she's telling the truth. Although she gradually learns to manage to not reveal everything while also not giving anything away. And so, yeah, there's this interesting part where you see all the way throughout characters trusting her because she's not throwing up, and how she learns to use that for her own benefit, but also against others. And she's an interesting character. I think the actress there, Anna DeMara, I think something like that, or Anna and something. She does a really good job. Great character. Very good. Very interesting. In fact, overall, all the characters were very good. I think Jamie Lee Curtis was underrated in this movie. I don't think enough people are recognizing her for the role she played, although she wasn't in it a lot. And then it was good to see Chris Evans do a little bit different from what we typically see him as, you know, Captain America. And obviously he's been in some other things. He was the Johnny Storm in Fantastic Four. He had a small role in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. He was in another teen movie. And so it was good to see him play kind of a little bit of a different character, where he wasn't just the nice guy all the time and an action hero. I think it suited him. I think it'll be good to see where he does go with his career next, now that he's kind of done with Marvel. And I think, yeah, he did a really good job. And I think he was maybe the best performance in the film, I want to say. But there were a few, yeah, really good parts. Christopher Plummer was fine, although I don't think it was a huge stretch for him to play the character he did. As I said, Jamie Lee Curtis is really good. Toni Collette is just always good. I think she's really underrated as an actress, actually. If you look at her track record of work, and if you've ever not seen some of those things, just watch a couple. I mean, a lot of people would have seen Little Miss Sunshine, but go beyond just that and everything she's in, she's really good. And she's actually does a really good job with accents too. So I think those couple of characters, or those actors, were fantastic. And as I said, the actor that plays Marta, also very good. So yes, that's kind of the premise of it all. As I said, these characters are really good. Afterwards, there was, talking about with the friends that I went and saw it with, there were a few parts of it that I felt were very, very heavy foreshadowing. There was one comment that everyone I've spoken to that has seen it picked up on, and we all kind of figured out that that was going to be important at some point. And when the moment happens, everyone goes, yeah, I know exactly what's going to happen here. And if you've seen it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, I'm pretty sure. But then there was also another thing involving Marta's role as the nurse that I didn't exactly see how it played out, but I had a suspicion that something happened, and it kind of was one of the twists almost. Yeah, and again, if you see the movie and then you've seen the ending, obviously you will perhaps take a guess what that is. Feel free to get in touch with me about any of this, by the way. The easiest way to do that is probably on Twitter. You can find me at EduDaveShin. That's EDU Dave, DAVE, and then Shin, TION. It's easy to find me if you want to ask any questions about what I thought about it. We can discuss it with spoilers if you really want to do that. But yeah, I think the movie's good. It's getting a lot of Oscar talk. I believe it was nominated. Out of this and Jojo Rabbit, which are the two that I've seen recently, I don't know which one's better. I think Jojo Rabbit is maybe a better movie. The problem I have with Knives Out is it seemed like it was going to be a really innovative crime text, and yet it wasn't. If anyone has ever taught the old crime fiction topic from the English syllabus over the last various years, not current, but previously, you'd probably know what I'm talking about. A lot of the classic tropes and formula were part of it. It was still very formulaic. It didn't really deviate from that much. There wasn't a major, like, there was a twist, but it was an expected twist. And so you were more just like, okay, what's the twist going to be? Rather than, oh, there was a twist that I wasn't expecting, I didn't see coming. That was part of my problem, I think, with the film. It just let me down a little bit that it wasn't predictable, and yet the formula of it was predictable. So it's a good movie, definitely worth watching, very good, but I wish I'd seen Parasite. It's very hard that you can see that now, but I suspect that's probably got a very good chance. Those seem to be the three. I think Marriage Story, is it Wedding Story? The one that's on Netflix, maybe. People are saying good things about it, but I haven't seen it. Maybe I'll get to watching that sometime. But I think, yeah, in terms of the crime fiction, again, very formulaic, wasn't overly shocking. Had a lot of the kind of stereotypical kind of roles that you'd expect. Was very much that English countryside manner type thing, but in America. So yeah, I think overall the movie's good. I think it's a really good movie if you want to explore, obviously, crime fiction. I think it's a good, there are some modern relevant updating things of that genre. And I think that is probably a good place if anyone wants to study that. I believe it's MA, so maybe that's a bit of a problem for most people. Although there's only a few parts that are really pushing it into that ranking. So it's really frustrating if it is MA. I could be wrong. It could be M, but I think it's MA. So it probably prevents a lot of people from using it. But again, there are some scenes you could definitely use from early on in it as they do the interview process of all these different suspects or concerned parties. And I think the role of the investigator, you could probably look at pretty well with some of those scenes. Camera work wasn't amazing. It was good, solid, but there was nothing that really made me go, oh, that was really impressive, the way it was done. And I think Jojo Rabbit had more of that. So that's why I think I'd probably put Jojo Rabbit just above it, but I don't think either one is going to win an Oscar. So yeah, I think in terms of perspective, this is a really excellent film because you could show those interview scenes of recounting the events of a certain night and a party that they're all at celebrate, like for Harlan's birthday, and the perspectives and point of views of those different characters. There's kind of a good 20 minutes that you could really look at all those things and kind of contrast the different views that each person gives, who's lying, who's not, what are the points they're saying, what experiences they had. I think that's probably the strength of the movie, is the conflicting experiences and perspectives of some of these characters and how they, the investigators basically trying to thread them all together and piece it all together. As an audience, you kind of have a lot more information than he does, but nonetheless, it kind of works. Narrative is another good like storyline plot. You have the genre aspects, obviously, it's going to tick off pretty easily. I think those would be the main things. There's some cool set design stuff. I think the set is probably the most impressive feature, which is a little bit sad. Michael Shannon does a great role, actually, as well. So I'm just talking about all these positives, I guess. It is a good film. Definitely, definitely watch it. But maybe, hopefully, I haven't. It's not a letdown for you now that I've said all those things. But it is good. Like, it's not disappointing. It's not like you watch, oh dear, what's a crime text that I've seen I could refer to? I don't know. It's not like one where you know how it's going to end. And that's what I'm saying. Like, the formula might be familiar, but the plot isn't. So you'll definitely be able to watch it and not, I wouldn't guess you'll know where it's ending. Yes, I'd be surprised if you could pick out how it ends until very close towards the end. So it's good in that sense. Yes, but yeah, in terms of using it as a text for teaching, definitely genre, perspective, narrative would be the main ones. I don't think you'd really get much more out of it than that. I think that's probably where you're limited to. So the War and Peace segment of this week, I'm still on track, which is good. I was worried that there was one day where I wasn't able to read a chapter. It's fine. And I was like, uh-oh, that started early, that I was falling behind now that the school year is well and truly underway. But I was then able to read an extra chapter one of the other nights, so I've caught up, back on track. I think the weekends are going to have to be my friend here, where I'll have to keep track of chapters I've read. I think if I can aim to read 8 chapters a week, when possible, that'll help. So if I read one a day, or the equivalent of one a day, plus an extra one on one of the weekend days, that'll work out in my favour. That's going to be the challenge, is every day, making sure I read it, getting through it. There were a couple of longer chapters for the book that made it difficult. And I think about this, that I think everyone, it's really good to have a reading challenge, to challenge yourself with reading. I think last week, maybe it's the week before, where I said, I don't want to get in the habit of reading because I have to. I want to read because I want to. But I also think that forcing myself to make that habit and have this challenge is actually quite good. And I think I'll be very happy with myself when it's all said and done. So I encourage everyone out there to challenge yourself in some way with reading, whether it's something I did a few years ago with reading a book a week, and it can be just make a list of books you've never read and always wanted to try reading them, whether it's reading, friends of mine just got a poster with the 100 greatest books of all time. They've got similar posters for 100 greatest TV shows and 100 greatest movies. And while there are probably heaps of movies that people would say, oh, that shouldn't be on there, that should be on there instead, et cetera, just like, you know, these other lists like the AFI list or the IMDb list. I know plenty of people that are working their way through those. Yeah, having some kind of challenge is actually pretty good. And I like the reward that you get at the end of it. So I'm racing my friends to get through the movies and the books now. I have a massive head start on the books, but between two of them, they might get through them all before I do. If they kind of do 50 each sort of thing. The movies, they've had a head start because they've been working their way through them, but they are also re-watching movies they've already seen in case one of them hasn't seen it. I, on the other hand, will be doing it on my own, and I will not be re-watching movies that I have seen for the most part. The TV show list, by the way, and then I'll get into War and Peace properly, is much more debatable. We were talking about some of the shows on that list. We have some concerns about that list, and it's a bit difficult to watch some of those shows. Some of them are 9 seasons long, like Frasier, I think. And even though, like, I've watched all of Frasier, I don't know that I would put all 9 seasons on there. I think there are 4 or 5 seasons that are very, very, very good. And it is very good. But there are definitely 3 or 4 that are not as good. But something like Boston Legal is not on there, which is a little bit disappointing. I think that's a great and underrated show. It's kind of, a lot of people aren't really remembering that much. 30 Rock, another one, not on there. I don't understand why that is. And yet, Arrested Development, which seasons 1, 2, and 3 are one of the greatest comedy shows ever. Yet, when you get to season 4 and 5, it's a bit of a drop-off. So, I think the list makers, it's an interesting, I don't know what process they went through to make it, but some of the options on there, and so I said to them, look, if you do the TV one, fair enough, but there's no way I'm doing that. Some of them are shows I want to watch anyway, and I think that's a better way to go about it. And I don't like the idea of forcing myself to watch shows just because they're on a list, because if it is several seasons long, or if even if it's 3 or 4 seasons long, but the episodes are very long themselves, that's just, I feel like it's a waste of my time. I won't enjoy it. Whereas movies, yeah, a couple of hours at the most, you know, you're talking about like 3.5 if it's one of those really longer ones. Other than that, you know, if you spend a couple of hours watching it, okay, fine, done. But that's it. Whereas most of these TV shows are going to take, you know, equivalent of a couple of days. So yes, the books, same sort of thing. I think the books, I was pretty happy with the list. I don't think there was really anything missing. I think there was maybe too many Charles Dickens. I'm not a big Dickens fan. I think I understand why he's popular and why he's important, but I would never recommend any of his books to people. Excuse me. I know that I've had a couple of conversations with people, and what I have said is, like, if you're going to read Dickens, same thing as kind of with Jane Austen. I absolutely understand the relevance and importance of them, but there's only a couple that if you read them, you kind of really understand what they're about, like the kind of whole works of that author. So for Dickens, the ones I always say, like, because I've read several of them, and maybe there are a couple of people who should say, no, you should read this one because it's really good. Read A Tale of Two Cities, because that was a bit more interesting and a little bit better. Christmas Carol, because you're pretty much everyone's familiar with that story, and so it's very easy to read. It's also a little bit shorter. Oliver Twist, again, people are pretty familiar with the premise of that story, but I think it's much more interesting towards the end. Then you have a debate as to whether you want to engage with one of the other big name kind of stories. I've read Great Expectations. It's long and it's slow and it's boring. Not much happens. I would probably not recommend people read it. That's my opinion. Because I think if you've read the others, Tale of Two Cities, Oliver Twist and Christmas Carol, you've kind of got the sense of the issues that Dickens is covering in his books. And obviously you could read something like Nicholas Nickleby or the Pickwick Papers, some of these other little shorter ones, David Copperfield, again, quite long, you know. So just keep all that in mind. Decide if you start reading Dickens, I would recommend one of those three, whether it's Christmas Carol that you're familiar with, Oliver Twist, which you probably have some familiarity with, and then Tale of Two Cities. Beyond that, I don't think you're going to get a lot out of reading other Dickens. But that being said, I could be wrong, having not read all of his things. Likewise, Jane Austen, there, I think you don't have to read all 6, 7 books that she wrote to get a good sense of kind of her style and what she's all about. And so I would recommend that you read, like, pick 4. Northanger Abbey's not bad. A little bit shorter, a little bit easier to read. I think it's the first novel too anyway. So that's pretty quick to get through. And it's a little bit different from the others in that it's got that kind of semi-gothic aspect to it. Mansfield Park, longer than the others for the most part, but again, a little bit different to the others. Then you've got the remaining 4, which is Emma, Persuasion, Pride and Prejudice, Sense and Sensibility. I feel like Emma and Sense and Sensibility are a little bit similar. Read one, and for most people it's going to be Emma because you may be more familiar with it and you may have seen Clueless. Pride and Prejudice and Persuasion, just pick one, don't read both. Obviously, Pride and Prejudice being the signature novel, the kind of the one that everyone points to and say, yeah, that's Austen. Give that one a go, skip Persuasion. I would not recommend reading both. I don't think you're going to get a lot out of reading both unless you just kind of want to be a completionist, or if you really enjoy it, in which case, obviously do it. As I said, they're fine. Definitely not terrible books, but just not my cup of tea. And I know I've said it before, I personally think that Jane Austen is a little bit overrated, but same thing with Dickens. I don't think that they're super relevant to our lives anymore, but I absolutely understand their place in the history of literature. I think Austen especially, you know, always held up as a kind of a really good example for changing views towards women and kind of female empowerment in many ways. And I absolutely completely agree with that. I think there is her place there. But I think we've come so far since that, that there are other books maybe that do more of that or kind of take it the next step. And I think Mary Shelley, obviously, as well, is kind of... I don't think we give enough respect for what she did as a female author at the time. If you look at kind of the context, she's, you know, contemporary of Austen. And I think even though she's lacking in famous novel Frankenstein, a strong female lead character, I think as a published author in that time and the story she came up with, rivaling those of men and in many cases still held up as an example, I think Mary Shelley needs... as for what she achieved is more important in many ways. So that's just my opinion. And I know some people will go, oh, it's controversial. You do misunderstand it. You just respect everyone. I get it. I'm not saying that Austen is not worthy of respect. I just, in my opinion, I think she's a bit overrated and we've moved past what she did, but we definitely should recognize her contributions to history of literature. So speaking of Austen, it's a good time to segue into War and Peace because the last few chapters I've read are very Austen-esque. We're talking, and this is the part that's actually really frustrated me, and that it's why Austen is actually really good. Because, so, in War and Peace right now, the last few chapters have been about, not arranged marriages, but the expectation that females in wealthy families in the higher society of Russia or St. Petersburg and Moscow are just expected to marry these men from other high society families and very prestigious and important noble families. And it's really troubling because these females kind of have no option around it. Their fathers are kind of deciding for them. And it's just expected that, you know, you need to marry them because everyone will think it's shameful if you don't. And it actually was quite troubling to read some of that stuff. And I think that is where it's really good that Austen doesn't have that, that she does let these kind of female characters first choose a little bit or have some greater degree of choice. And again, she was writing a little bit before War and Peace was written. So I think that's what... I know these views have become outdated and you probably don't write books like that anymore and that's what society was like back then, but it was still quite difficult to get into reading all that stuff. We're kind of still dealing with Napoleon a little bit, but he's kind of taken a back seat in part three. So each week there's only going to be minimal updates because if I only read a few chapters, not much is going to happen in them. Especially at the moment, it's not like a couple weeks ago when I was reading 20 to 30 chapters a week. Now I'm reading 7 or 8. It's going to move a little bit slowly. So these updates will probably take a little bit. Not much will happen. But it's still each kind of little progress. I think it's good helping me reflect on what's happening. So War and Peace, by the way, is on that list of 100 novels. So I'll be really happy when I get through that because then I'm just going to work my way through the rest of the list. So thank you, everyone. Again, if you want to get in touch with me, Twitter's the best way, edudaveshin, edudave, D-A-V-E, shin, T-I-O-N. You can hit me up there. Let me know if you're listening, what you think. That'd be great. Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.